Well, Governor Scott Walker has opened up a 6-point lead over Democrat Mary Burke in the latest Marquette University Law School poll. We'll talk about the race for governor, how Wisconsinites feel about the direction of the state, and the outlook for job creation, among other things. With Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School poll and a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. He's the co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. Professor Franklin, welcome back to the Joy Cardine program.
Good to be here. Good morning.
So what do we make of this? In last October's poll, Governor Walker led Mary Burke 47-45%. Now he's up 47-41. To what can we attribute this?
Yeah, it's a little bit of tea leaves as to why it moved, but let's be clear. So the governor was at 47 in October. He's at 47 now. It's Burke's number that's dipped a little bit from 45-41. To put that in context, in October, we were interviewing right at the end of the federal shutdown, a bad time for Republicans. This time, we're interviewing just as the state announces its newfound budget projection surplus. And so that's a fairly good time for folks here in the state. So I think you would certainly say that the context of the January poll is one where good news has dominated for the state's government and for the governor. The other side, though, is that Mary Burke has still not really introduced herself to the public. At least she's not become a much more visible figure than she was. Back in October, 70% said they did not know enough about her to have an opinion about her. And in our January poll, the number's exactly the same, also 70%. So she's been traveling the state, having meetings in cities and small towns around the state and getting to know voters and supporters one-on-one. But the massive media campaign that would really start to introduce her to a large number of people in the state still hasn't begun.
Would she have benefited from a primary battle with Kathleen Vineout, who recently withdrew as a Democratic candidate for governor?
The thing about primaries is that candidates and party officials always say, no. We don't want to spend our resources arguing with each other. But there is an argument that primaries can hone a campaign. They can push your staff to develop your ideas and to run an efficient campaign. That this is, you know, part of what the democratic process is having a contest within parties as well as between. I think you can point to Scott Walker's race in 2010, where he was challenged in the governor's race by Mark Newman, as an example of a primary that did not seem to damage Walker at all going into the election. But you could also point to the primary between Kathleen Falk and Mayor Barrett, as well as Kathleen Vinehout and Secretary of State La Follette. In 2012, in the run-up to the recall race, where a lot of resources were spent in that campaign that then seemed not to be available for the actual recall itself. So I think the bottom line is primaries can be helpful. They can also be divisive and damaging. It's almost impossible to say ahead of time what's going to be the result of a fight within the party.
Now, most of this poll was conducted before the State of the State address, in which the governor laid out a lot of positive news about Wisconsin, from his perspective anyway. How might these results be different had the whole thing been conducted after the speech, do you think?
Well, I think it takes a while for news like that to percolate, but the basic story that the state had found or was expecting more revenues than projected. That news broke the week before we were in the field. We interviewed Monday through Thursday of last week. And so voters who were paying close attention to the news about this would have heard things about the state budget being in better than expected shape for the entire poll. As for the state of the state itself, some of that news leaked out a little bit earlier, was put out a little bit early. But I'm not sure that one event would dramatically move this. And we'll find out next time we interview. Other events will have happened in between, and we'll find out whether the things that helped voters say the state is headed in the right direction, helped them say the budget's in good shape, are those things that last? If they are, then they'll be consequential for the election. If they're just a flash in the pan, a result of this one-time week of good news, then those things won't matter nearly as much by the time we get to November.
Nearly 8 in 10 in your poll say Wisconsin is not going to hit that quarter million jobs figure that the governor promised in his campaign when he ran for election the first time by the end of his first term. How important is that going to be in November if the governor does come up short on the jobs number?
It's a fairly stunning number. 79% said we would not reach that promise. Only 14% said they thought we would. So unless something dramatically changes in public opinion about that, essentially you're talking about the vast, vast majority of voters realizing that the jobs production simply isn't getting us there. So what that means is that for vote decisions, people have to decide whether that target, that number is very meaningful to them. The governor in the campaign said he expected to be judged on that promise, or whether people find reasons to say to themselves and to each other, well, we couldn't get there because of X, Y, or Z, reasons to dismiss that, or it was just a campaign promise. It was not realistic.
Well, and that's what I wanted to ask about. I mean, did you ask people whether they ever believed that 250,000 jobs was a realistically achievable number?
We did not ask them that specifically. We did ask them, though, whether the promise would be important for their personal vote decision. Republicans still said it would be important. More than 60% said it would be either very or somewhat important for them. But Democrats were much more likely to say they found it important. So I think what you're seeing there is a little bit of the psychological issue. Democrats, who are overwhelmingly opposed to Governor Walker in this poll, say that's a really important feature and a good reason for my vote against him. Republicans are finding ways to say, you know, it's not really that important, and ultimately, almost certainly, we'll continue to vote for the governor. Again, in our data, over 90% are already lined up behind him, regardless of that jobs number.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the results of the most recent Marquette University Law School poll with Charles Franklin, the director of the poll and professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, and with you if you choose to join us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org is the email address. You can also find the Joy Cardine program on Facebook and leave your comment or question there. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. Our discussion continues in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The latest Marquette University Law School poll is out, and we're talking about that with the director of the poll, Charles Franklin, who's also professor of law and public policy at Marquette. He is the co-founder of Pollster.com and the founder of Polls and Votes. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine, and we're inviting your participation. It's not a poll, it's a talk show. We'd like to hear your opinion about the poll. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, talk at WPR or find us on Facebook. Professor, one thing I forgot to do at the outset that I want to make sure we cover, just to make sure we've dotted all the I's and crossed the T's, so to speak, tell us how the poll was conducted.
Sure. It's a telephone interview with using a live interviewer, so it's not a robocall. We interview 802 registered voters in this sample from throughout the state, and we interview by both cell phone and landline. In the end, about 40% of our interviews were taken by cell phone and the rest by landline. One of the things, of course, that I think everyone knows is cell phones are becoming ubiquitous. In fact, in the latest data, 90% of households in the country, at least, and I think in Wisconsin pretty similarly, have both a cell phone and perhaps something else. About 30% are cell phone only, but 90% of the population has access to a cell phone. So as a result, more and more polls, ours and others, are reaching people on whichever device is convenient for them, whether it's cell or landline.
Okay. Again, 800-642-1234, the number to call to join our discussion. We're talking about the most recent poll conducted by the Marquette University Law School poll and some of the findings in that poll. Any chance that Governor Walker will face a Republican challenger in the primary?
Well, not that I'm aware of. There's always the possibility that someone might decide to jump in, but it's very hard to believe that that would be a serious challenge to him.
Well, anybody looking at this poll and seeing how Republicans feel about their governor would probably take one look at that and say, well, you know, I guess maybe another time.
Well, I think certainly the data support that. In our data, 90% of Republicans say they're voting for Walker, just 7% are not. Likewise, his favorability rating is really extremely high among Republicans, 89% favorable, just 10% unfavorable. So there's certainly no reason based on those numbers to expect any kind of challenge to him.
Now, more than half of the people surveyed in your poll think the state is moving in the right direction. That has to be a little disquieting for Democrats. And what is that? What do you think that opinion is based on?
Well, it should be disquieting, and I do think that it's the obligation then of the Democrats in their campaign to figure out how to change public's views about that, because every challenger, whether it's here in the state or elsewhere, has to start by explaining to the electorate why the incumbent does not deserve reelection, and in some situations the state or the country is in bad enough shape that that's a pretty easy sell. But it still becomes the obligation of the challenger to lay out the case against reelection. As for why or what the situation is, I think you see in our data actually an interesting mix of things. So we started to talk about the right direction, wrong track measure, with 54% saying the state's headed in the right direction, 40% saying it's off on the wrong track. There's also general optimism about the state of the budget here, and Governor Walker's job approval rating ticked up to 51% approval this month. It'd been just a couple of points below that recently. So in those things are going in a direction that the public seems quite positive about. And those are awfully important features for an election campaign. On the other hand, when you dig down into individual issues, you find quite a few issues that are favoring the Democrats. And I know we'll get to these a little bit later, but just to tick them off for a moment, we found that voters favor an increase in the minimum wage, that they favor the extension of unemployment benefits, that voters do not like the property tax, and so to that extent the governor's proposals play to them, but by nearly a 60% margin, 59%, believe that tax cuts favor the wealthy, not the middle class or the poor. And so there are other examples here where public opinion is not at all unified in a single agenda that favors the Republican Party right now. There's actually some real divisions. Voters also, I should throw out, were supportive of the tax cuts that were enacted last year. So that's not to say that thinking the wealthy profit from tax cuts doesn't mean that we're not happy when we get our own tax cuts. That certainly was shown in last year's data. So there in some other areas, I think the campaign is wide open for a vigorous debate over the substance of policy, the direction it should go in. But what you see in our data clearly is when you sit back and look at the direction of the state of the budget, and so on, people are more satisfied now than they were recently.
So when we take a look at these issues like the minimum wage and unemployment insurance, how likely are those issues to actually be decisive for people when they go to the polls in November?
To me, that hinges an awful lot on the nature of the campaign that's run, on the success of a candidate, presumably a Democrat in this case, arguing those particular issues and explaining to voters why they should care about those issues. Conversely, on the governor's case, it's up to him to argue why the successes that voters do see are the most important things, and that disagreements on individual policies, like the ones we were just talking about, or on some others like ultrasounds for abortion, or whether the state should have expanded the Medicaid and Badger Care system along with the federal expansion, whether those things are important. And so I think it's in the vigorous contest between a Democrat and a Republican that we'll really see voters be given the reasons to think about those things and decide that one side has the more convincing argument than the other.
I'll take a moment here to call out to our listeners and see what they think about some of these issues. Do you think Wisconsin is heading in the right or wrong direction, and why? What do you think of the state's nearly $1 billion surplus and Governor Walker's plan to use it to cut taxes again? What are your thoughts about Democratic gubernatorial candidate Mary Burke? Has she grown on you since she jumped in the race, or are you getting turned off? Anyone else you'd like to see get in the race for governor? All of those questions and whatever else you come up with are fodder for our discussion this hour. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org is the email address. And you can also find the Joy Cardine program on Facebook and leave your comment or question there. Professor Franklin, I'm wondering how Wisconsinites feel about Governor Walker possibly running for president. Did we get any idea of that from your poll?
Yeah, we've been asking this a little bit off and on. This time we asked, would you personally like to see Scott Walker run for president? Overall, 31% said yes and 63% said no. But of course, there's a big partisan gap there among Republicans who would be the important voters for a primary campaign. 60% said they would like to see him run, but a third, 34%, said not. Now, for comparison, we're in the unusual position of having a second plausible presidential candidate, and that's Congressman Paul Ryan. Overall, 39% would like to see him run, 51% not. But again, in the GOP, it's two-thirds, 66% to 25%, that would like to see him run. So I think Wisconsin does find itself in a position where two candidates who are much talked about as potential case candidates for the presidency, though neither has made any public declarations about that, have pretty strong support within their party, but also a quarter to a third who have reservations about them running.
Let's take a quick call before we have to break for news. Cody in Oshkosh. Cody, good morning.
Good morning. I would say our economy is improving in spite of Governor Walker. He's done everything he could to harm our economy, if anything. But my question is, I don't know if you did much polling on it. You mentioned it previously. But the failure to expand Medicaid, which cost taxpayers $100 million and kicked roughly 80,000 people off health insurance, is something he did directly to the citizens of Wisconsin that cost them money and inflicted pain on tens of thousands. So to me, that's one reason not to vote for him.
Thanks, Cody. Professor Franklin, how did people feel about the Medicaid question, do you think?
Yeah, we asked about that in October. We did not ask about it in this particular poll. But we found over 55% were opposed to the governor's decision. It's a little complicated decision. The governor is covering everybody, whether they have children or not, who are below the poverty level. But he's pushing people who are just above the poverty level to join the Obamacare healthcare marketplace instead of being covered under what's nationally called Medicaid, but Badger Care here in the state. So it's a complicated policy. The governor argues, of course, that his decision is a responsible one. Cody did a good job, I think, of stating the criticism of that. And that's exactly the debate that I think a fall campaign could engage in that would, you know, help voters see what some of these decisions are and hear the arguments on both sides.
We're talking about the results of the most recent Marquette University Law School poll with Charles Franklin, director of the poll and professor of law and public policy at Marquette, and with you if you decide to join us at 800-642-1234. What about you? Do you think Wisconsin's heading in the right or wrong direction? And why or why not? 800-642-1234. We're going to pause our discussion and take a look at the news, and then we'll be back with Charles Franklin and with you in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. We're talking about the most recent Marquette University Law School poll with Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy and the director of the poll at Marquette University, and with you at 800-642-1234. Well, Professor Franklin, we just heard Chuck Quirnbach talking about the president's approval numbers in Wisconsin, and the we've heard a lot about the opinion of people about the Affordable Care Act and where that's gone since the rollout and how that's changed the landscape. Let's talk a little bit about the president's approval rating in Wisconsin and what that means for anybody running on the Democratic ticket from the governor's race on down.
Sure. Yeah, there's clear evidence in our poll that the troubled rollout has had an effect. Let's start with the opinion about the Care Act itself. Back in October, 44% were favorable to it, 48% unfavorable. That was in line with what we've seen in public opinion here in the state and nationally since healthcare reform was passed in 2010, with something in the high 40s opposed to it, something in the mid to low 40s supporting it. But in our latest data in January, only 35% were supportive, 56% were opposed. So that's a pretty substantial change, not just month to month, but compared to the long-term opinion about health care reform. That's reflected in Obama's job numbers. This month, his approval has fallen to 44% in the state, 50% disapprove. And that's the worst he's done in the 2 years that we've been doing the Marquette Law School poll. It beats the previous low, which occurred in May of 2012, by a point or so. And so we're seeing those effects. I think we'll see this in part in the State of the Union address tonight and going forward, is how much can those numbers shift possibly upwards if the health care reform runs more smoothly, and by all accounts the computer side at least is better than it was before. But once second-term presidents fall in the polls, they generally have a hard time climbing too far back. For the president, he's not at this point in national polling below 40%, which would be a real danger line. But the trend here is negative, and that's something that has to be worrisome to him and his administration, but also worrisome for Democrats at the state level.
Let's talk about taxes, because your poll found out a number of things. You pointed out that people were happy about the property tax cuts and about the tax cuts they got last year, but they're also seeming to lean toward taxing the wealthy more. And there are some other interesting aspects to tax policy and so forth. Let's talk about that for just a moment.
Sure. And let me put this a little bit in context. Back in the end of last year, Governor Walker started talking about restructuring taxes in the state. And Lieutenant Governor Clefish has been holding talking sessions around the state to listen to ideas about how the tax system could be reformed. In particular, the governor said he didn't have a position on this, but just throwing out the idea of what if we could reduce or even eliminate the income tax. So something well short of any kind of specific proposal, but beginning to get the conversation started about taxes in the state. So it was that we specifically were addressing with these questions. I should also say that the news of his specific proposals from the state of the state were announced too late for us to change questions and include those in our survey. So we're not specifically addressing what he said in the state of the state. Now, having said that what we find is we ask people first, if there were just one tax that you would like to cut, which would it be? 42% said the property tax, 34% income, and 22% sales. And that's in line with data that we see here and in other states, that the property tax is the one that more voters typically say is either the most onerous or the one that they like the least or the one that they would like to see reduced. We followed up, though, by asking if they were willing to raise the sales tax in order to reduce property taxes. And there only 39% were willing, 56% were unwilling. So even though the property tax is the least popular and sales tax is the least unpopular, voters were still not willing, by a pretty substantial margin, were not willing to substitute more sales tax to replace property taxes. We asked the same question about the income tax and got almost identical numbers. 39% were not willing to increase sales in order to reduce income tax. 39% were willing to do that. 57% were not willing. But the one thing that jumped out was, would you be willing to increase taxes on income taxes on those making over $250,000? There, 64% were willing, 32% were not. And so that's a striking difference between people's willingness to see their own taxes change, but willing to look at high-income individuals and pretty strongly, by almost 2-1, support that.
And that number would have to include some Republicans, too.
Yes, it does. Here we're beginning to get beyond you know, in a lot of our data, we always see a very sharp break between Democrats and Republicans, with independents somewhere in the middle. But when you are seeing majorities as high as 64%, you're beginning to see things that have at least substantial support, not necessarily majority support, but substantial support across all parties. And it also connects with a question we've been asking for several months now. Do you think tax cuts do more for the poor, for the middle class, or for the wealthy? And in our latest poll, 59% say tax cuts benefit the wealthy the most, only 21% the middle class, and only 11% say that tax cuts help the poor. So I think what we're seeing here is, on the one hand, people support the property tax and income taxes that were tax cuts that were enacted last year, according to our October poll, but are increasingly skeptical that those tax cuts really benefit the middle class or the poor, and see those going to the wealthy. And I think you see that reflected in a willingness by a big chunk of the electorate to raise taxes on the well-to-do in order to provide more generalized property tax relief.
Here's a comment from Carol on Facebook, who writes, about 35 years ago, 70% of taxes were paid by businesses. Now individuals pay 70%. That and stagnant or declining wages and fewer good-paying jobs due to outsourcing is killing the American dream. Did you get any sense that, I mean, I guess those who feel that the state isn't on the right track would probably share Carol's viewpoint?
Yes. I think, excuse me, there's an interesting argument to be made there. We focus specifically on personal taxes, so that's why we weren't asking about just shifting it to corporate taxes, but it's worth doing. I think one of the questions that underlies this is the idea of progressive taxation. You know, there was a time in this country 70, 80 years ago when it was widely accepted that the well-off should pay a higher percentage in income taxes and the poor should pay lower percentages. Over the decades, the idea of a flatter tax, a less progressive tax, has come into effect, and we've seen the leveling of both federal and state income taxes over time. And polling, not ours, but others, has consistently shown pretty strong support, not necessarily majority support, but support for a flatter tax system. And I think this raises the question of a discussion of progressive taxing and whether that is, in fact, still a notion that Americans can embrace or not. We tried to get at that with the sales tax by asking a question that said, some people say sales taxes are unfair because they take a bigger percentage of the total income of poor families. Other people say that sales taxes are fair because everybody pays it when they buy things. And we found that only 28% said they were unfair for taking a bigger share of the poor's income. 69% said they were fair because everybody paid them. And I think that goes directly to the heart of this question of progressive taxes. Now, we did not ask a similar question on income taxes. Maybe we can come back to that in a future survey.
Okay. We're going to take a break and then come back. Lots more to talk about with Charles Franklin and more phone calls to get to. We'll do all that in just a few moments. You're listening to the Joy Cardine program. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, Governor Walker has opened up a 6-point lead over Democrat Mary Burke in the latest Marquette University Law School poll. We've been talking about that and a lot of other stuff this hour with the author of the, or the director of the poll, I should say, Charles Franklin, a professor of law and public policy at Marquette. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Let's go right to the phones and let's take a call from Sarah in Sauk Prairie. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I am very disturbed that there are discussions of changing taxing based on a predicted windfall. We don't know that we're going to have that money, and a discussion is good, but to actually change taxation before we know we have the money, I find very irresponsible and disturbing, and I'll take my comments off air.
Sarah, thanks for the call. When you were conducting the poll, Charles Franklin, did we know about the surplus at that point?
We had just heard that it was going to be announced, or it was announced, I believe, on the Friday before we started interviewing. But the details had not been fully fleshed out. Now, those details were more clear during the time we were doing the interviewing. But this point that Sarah raises is one that Democrats, Mary Burke in particular, but also a few Republicans have raised questions about is how wise is it to take this predicted windfall and spend it before we really know that we have it in the bank, as Sarah puts it. And so I think this is an area that we will see some argument about. The legislative details of exactly what's going to happen are still up in the air in Madison.
We have another caller who I think wants to make a similar point. Maddie in Waupaca is with us this morning. Let's go there. Maddie, good morning.
Good morning. What I wanted to ask is, was there anything in the poll that would inform the people that even though they're wanting to give money back, that what state is actually in debt and how much the debt is? I wish there would be more publicity about that, that the state is in debt and how much the debt is?
Yeah, that's a terrific question. I think one of the interesting things about a campaign, and this will happen over the year, is it's at the campaign period that you've got two voices speaking on these issues. In between campaigns, you have an incumbent administration of whichever party that only talks about the good side of their arguments. What we see here in the current state budget is that the technical balance of the budget is better than it has been in the past, but we are also borrowing much more for things like transportation than we did in the past, so that the total state indebtedness has grown considerably. The current budget, for example, borrows over $900 million, nearly $1 billion, for road construction, projects that normally might have been paid for out of other sources. Now, Republicans would say that's partly because Governor Doyle took money away from the transportation fund in his administration in order to pay for other services. So there's a lively debate to be had there about who made wise decisions or poor decisions about borrowing and transportation.
Yeah, and if we go back far enough on the transportation fund, we stopped indexing the gas tax for inflation quite a long time ago, and some people are saying, well, that's one reason why you don't have enough money in the transportation fund to pay for roads.
And I think a great example of where anti-tax notions that simply say we shouldn't, you know, increment the tax come back to bite you in the long run. Again, you know, a very legitimate debate about what taxes should be and how we do them. But along with that needs to come a debate about what are the state of state finances. And so I think the fall campaign, or including the summer campaign, is the time for us to hear the airing of these kinds of arguments, where the opposition, the Democrats now, will have that platform to raise whatever issues they want to raise. And the question is this one of the issues they want to fight this battle on, or are there different issues to fight on?
Let's take a call from Susan in Phelps next. Susan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. I find the two-party system to be extraordinarily adversarial in the state of Wisconsin right now, and therefore pretty dysfunctional. Were you able to glean any information as to what the success might be of independent candidates should they be able to run?
Good question. It is very adversarial, especially in the sense that voters' perceptions are very starkly polarized in the state. We've seen surprisingly little shifts in opinion over the last 2 years. It's as if we're sort of frozen on today, I have to think that's a pun, frozen into, you know, having chosen sides in 2010 and then especially in the recall. And we haven't really moved much from that. In principle, there's an opening for third parties, but third parties have, in American history, had a very hard time finding a way into the system. More often than not, third parties divide the vote and in a way that one of the other major parties win. The other thing that insurgent groups typically have done in American history is come in and reform or change the existing parties. And that's the other, certainly historically, the more potent route. But, a third party has to arise that really appeals to people who are disenfranchised or disinclined to support either the Democrats or the Republicans.
Thanks, Susan, for that call. We touched on this just a little bit earlier, but I want to make sure that we cover it completely before the end of the hour. Wisconsinites in favor of raising the minimum wage, but not by a whole lot.
Yes. Let me explain the way we asked this question as well. We did two versions of the question. The first said some people think the minimum wage should be increased to make the low-wage earners a bit better off or better off. But we balanced that by saying other people argue that increasing the minimum wage will lead to a reduction of jobs, which is a frequent argument of those opposed to minimum wage increases. So we balance the question that way. Despite being reminded of the potential job damage, 62% nevertheless supported increasing the minimum wage. Just 35% were opposed. But we followed that question by telling people what the minimum wage actually is, $7.25 an hour, and then said, now, what do you think the minimum wage should be? A quarter, 25%, said keep it where it is at $7.25. A third said raise it to about $9, and another quarter raise it to $10. 5% would go to 11, and 10% would go to $12 or more. So I think if you put those two together, when reminded of what the current minimum wage is, support for keeping it the same goes down a little bit from 35 to 25% support. And 58% say either $9 or $10, with only 15% going above that. So I think what that shows is support for an increase, but a more incremental increase in minimum wage, not a large bump beyond $12.
We only have a couple of minutes left here. I wanted to just touch on a couple of other quick points that came up in the poll. The Kenosha Casino. I'm guessing that most people outside of the southeastern corner of the state don't really either know much about the Kenosha Casino or care.
That's right. In terms of the percentage who don't have an opinion about it, that is certainly higher when we move from the southeast to the northwest. Opinions pretty evenly divided, 42-41 in favor. 42 in favor, 41 opposed. That's virtually unchanged from about the same split, 41-38, that we saw in October. As you would expect, interest is higher in the southeast. There is majority support for it in the southeastern counties other than the city of Milwaukee, where there's an existing casino that argues that it would be threatened by a casino in nearby Kenosha.
And very quickly, in about 30 seconds, a lot of us don't know anything about the Common Core. How much do we care about it?
Well, we really don't. 36% said they'd heard nothing at all. 10% said they had just heard the name. Common Core is a set of standards for education with the goal of having a common set across all of the country so that you can make apples-to-apples comparisons in student achievement across the country. It's become controversial as people from the right have particularly criticized it. So there's a lot of room for information. Having said that, of the ones that had an opinion, more people were favorable than unfavorable to it.
All right, Professor Franklin, thanks for joining me this hour. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School poll. This program, this hour programming was produced by Bill Martins. Cynthia Schuster was the director, and on-air production by Robin Cherry. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.